Hi, this is Jody, and welcome to Mommy Brain Revisited. In this episode of the podcast, I'll be talking with Dr. Ruth Feldman about her exciting new research on adult-infant neural synchrony and the importance of maternal cues. Happy listening.
Soundstripe.
I'm just going to start and ask you, what made you interested in the parental brain?
Initially?
Yeah.
I think I started as a researcher being interested in parenting and the mother-infant relationship, not only because I was a young mother and I have five children of my own, but because I really think this is the foundation for everything else in life. Our health, our mental health, our social abilities, our capacity to be human, our capacity to be empathic. So everything draws so heavily on parenting. And, you know, that's also part of our evolutionary history, part of the natural world we inhabit. We are mammals, and mammals are born with immature brain, and it's the mother and the contact with the mother that helps our brain mature. So parenting is such a key factor of who we are. So as my research on parenting developed, I realized that the parental brain is that key component, that there is some massive change that the maternal brain undergoes with pregnancy and then birth and then child rearing. And then again, I was looking at the paternal brain and how that complements similar, different from the maternal brain. And that really is the beginning of the voyage for every mammalian young, is that alteration that happened in the maternal brain when she becomes a mother and she's able to shape the child brain. So I would say after two decades of looking into different facets of the maternal brain and the paternal brain and what happens when fathers take a primary caregiving role, and for instance, when two gay men have a child, and what happens to the brain when mothers are depressed and they aren't able, or what happened when the child is born prematurely and then there is that period of separation that mothers can't just move from having the child in their womb to having the child in their arm and their. So what all that does to the mother's brain, I think with time, I move to the question of brain-to-brain coordination, which is really actually thinking of Homo sapiens as the winning species is this. We are not strongest. We're not tallest. We're not the most physically fit, but we are probably the most able to socially communicate and collaborate and be empathic. And I thought that switching a vision at the maternal brain or at that maternal child interface, which I thought was the most critical interface for human life. Mm. And looking at it from the brain-to-brain synchrony. Synchrony was the concept I went into behavioral research with as a PhD student. I quantified like microanalysis of mother-infant brain-to-brain, mother-infant behavioral synchrony. And then I thought that synchrony, and initially I was a musician, so playing jazz. So the concept of synchrony was really the concept I came from. And then I moved into doing a brain-to-brain synchrony. So we do now several hyper-scanning EEG studies. And this is a very important, in my opinion, a very important, gives us an important complementary view, because when you do, we like to do as ecologically valid as research as possible, particularly when it comes to attachment. So remember the origins of attachment with Lawrence and going into the ecology and looking what happens when the duckling hatch, and attachment should be studied in its natural ecology. So when we did the maternal or paternal brain, we went to the home, we videotaped parents and infant in their natural habitat, and then we had parents looking at those stimuli in the magnet, as opposed to not their own infants. But still, you are in a very unnatural context. You're lying in the magnet. I mean, you can move, you can socially interact. You're watching a natural stimuli, but it's not really a natural moment, or it's not natural attachment moment or social moment. And this is exactly what you could do with hyperscanning EEG.
I'm just going to pause there for our listeners. When Dr. Feldman's talking about magnet, she's talking about the looking or recording brain images. So you have to lie in the special machine and not move for that. And whereas an EEG records essentially brain waves. So it's a different technique where you can move while you have the device or the series of devices on your scalp.
Right. So you wear a cap. Yeah. Right. Thanks for pausing. You really wear a cap, but you could really interact. The mom wears a cap, the baby wears a cap. But besides that, they can interact socially in a very natural way. Yeah. So we had several studies where we measured mother-infant brain-to-brain synchrony in as naturalistic setting as possible. And the study that just came out, I would say last 2 or 3 weeks ago, is our first product from that line of work. So we're looking at mother's brain and father's brain, a depressed mother's brain. And this is our first publication from that line of work.
I love that you have this whole story starting with being a musician, essentially jazz musician, and that synchrony, the behavioral synchrony. And now because of our technology, we can do this brain synchrony, which is fascinating.
Right. And really what happens to the brain is that it changes during interaction with our child, and the child's brain changes and our brain changes and we correspond. So it's what transpires between brains that is of interest to us at this point.
Yeah. And this reminds me of the fact that it's the interaction and the experience that we know is really important in the parental brain development. So it's not like, you know, there's a birth and all of a sudden the brain is ready to go and knows how to parent. This doesn't happen. It's a lot of learning and it's a whole process. And this is also for baby's development too. So it's a huge developmental phase, both for the parent, but obviously for the infant as well. Right. So this is super cool.
And you know that, right. And that brings us back to like the 70s when the studies of parenting began, and the concept of mismatch and reparation, that you see it also in the brain-to-brain synchrony. We're certainly not born perfect parents, but we never are. So mm-hmm. The way our behavior and our brain works is that there's always constantly moments where we mismatch and we don't read the kid's cue and we don't synchronize, and then we repair them. So mismatch and reparation is the story of being a parent.
And I think this is important for people to understand, because often parents don't understand it is a learning process and you're supposed to make mistakes as you go. That's part of learning how to figure it out. And our brain is ready to learn and it's being modified at this time. So I think like that is super fascinating and super important to understand. So cool. So tell us about this study, because I was looking over it today and this is so interesting. It's so interesting because you add in a whole other sensory modality.
Exactly. The olfactory. So probably, you know, from rodent research that attachment in rodent is really guided by olfactory cues. This is the main sensory system for the development of attachment. And it really did not get much research in human development, and certainly nothing to do with a parental brain. There was never research in the parental brain that included olfaction. So we wanted to really see the role of olfaction in the development of the parental brain from the angle of brain-to-brain synchrony. That also answers, you know, also to provide an answer to a very important question of how do mothers prepare their children to life within social groups? Because there is this human form exclusive attachment, it's me and my baby. But then pretty early on, let's say the second 6 months of life, your child moves little by little to social contacts with other, with the grandma, with the babysitter, with children. Your child will need to learn to trust other women in the ecology. And when you think about non-human primates or humans in traditional societies, this is the way they raised their young. They were several female, sometimes of a kin relationship, sometimes not, that together raised the child. And it was really the way kids were reared. And that was very helpful to mothers. So mothers need to somehow signal those women in the environment as safe, that the child can turn to them and trust them and attach to them. So we asked how mothers do it, and we hypothesized that perhaps smell, body odor, the sense of olfaction would be one vehicle for the transfer of attachment from the mother, the intimacy of the mother-infant bond to life within larger social group, is because smell is the only sensory cue that stays when the mother is gone. Mm-hmm. So actually it can represent the mother. It's the only cue that can represent the mother in her absence. So think about it. Infants need to see the mother to feel her, or to touch the mother, or to hear the mother, but they can have a smell of the mother present in that tent or house or somewhere, and the mother is gone. And that maybe could tell the baby that the place where my smell remained is a good place, is a safe place. So perhaps that could function as a mechanism for the transfer of attachment to other adults, other female adults, who typically used to take care of the infant in traditional societies or in extended families, cultures that still live by extended families. So what we did was like that. This is how the experiment went. For two nights before the experiment, we went to the home of mothers whose infants were in the second 6 months of life, between about 6 months and about 12 months, that this is a very important period for the development of the social brain of infants. There's like rapid development, both in terms of volume and in terms of connectivity of the child's social brain. And the child's social brain at that time, prior to the onset of language, develops in the context of attachment. So there is like an external regulatory process by which mothers help shape the child's social brain. So this is a very important part, window. Between 6 months, infants can already vocalize and interact, recognize their mother. There is that separation anxiety because the child already knows who is the mother and who is not the mother. And about 10, 11 months before, there is reorganization that prepares for language. So we're talking about that window. So we had we gave the mother a clean t-shirt, and she had to sleep with a t-shirt for two consecutive nights. And we asked her not to wash her hair with a smelly deodorant and not to use a lot of perfumes. And then she put, between the nights, she put it in a jar, she put it in the freezer. And after these two nights, the mother and the infants came to the lab.
Okay.
So in the lab, there was a strange female. This was another mother from the same neighborhood. Our university is in a small town near Tel Aviv. So another mother from the same little town who had a baby at the same age. Mm. So she can be the strange female that the child should get to know. Okay, so it's another mother. The infant has never seen her before. She's from the same neighborhood and she has a baby the same age. And then we had three paradigms. First, we wanted to see whether, as expected, that face-to-face interaction increase brain-to-brain synchrony. So mother and infant first sat like back-to-back and then sat face-to-face in the same proximity. So first, each one was turning to the window, to the walls, and then they turned to interact face-to-face. And we saw that indeed, face-to-face interaction increase brain-to-brain synchrony between. So infants are biologically programmed to connect and synchronize with the mother in a face when the mother looks at them, when the mother vocalizes, when the mother laughs, all of these repetitive rhythmic interactions that we see throughout all cultures, universal. What they do is that they shape the brain-to-brain synchrony, they enhance it, they cement this brain-to-brain synchrony with the mother. The second question was whether interaction with a mother would lead to better synchrony than interaction with a female stranger. So we compared mother to a stranger, but we compared mother to a stranger in two conditions. First, the infants were sitting on a high chair. First, they had, this was randomized. Either they had a t-shirt, a clean t-shirt spread on the tray, that no smell, or the t-shirt that the mother wore for two nights. So it was like the maternal body odor condition. The infants were interacting with a stranger in the presence of their mother's smell. So we saw, for the second question, we saw that indeed the attachment is unique. Infants synchronize more behaviorally, but interestingly, more brain with their mother. So the brain synchronizes much more when you're interacting with your mother than when you're interacting with the stranger. But the interesting finding was what happened when infants interacted with a stranger in the presence of the mother's body odor. And at that time, we found no differences. This really attenuated the differences between interaction with mother and stranger. So when infants interact with a stranger, in the presence of the mother's odor, the degree of synchrony between the two brain is just like with their mother, as if we are representing the mother here through her smell. And this we thought was a mechanism by which mothers like lend their presence or signal that other women as safe and allowing the child to form a full-blown brain-to-brain synchrony with that stranger. Now, what was interesting, we also did microcoding of a second-by-second analysis of the videotape that of the interaction with a mother, with a stranger with a smell, and with the stranger without the mother body odor. And we saw that infants looked at the stranger more and smiled more, felt safer, and did more approach behaviors in the context of maternal body odor. And this probably, those behavior probably led to some kind of a phase shift so that they synchronized more with, and that we know from research on smell that maternal odor, infant recognized their mother's odor from day one, from the mother amnio fluid, infants neonates can recognize, and it calms them. Mother's smell calms the infant and soothes the infant. And infants were calmer in the presence of their mother's smell, and they were able to look and socialize more with a stranger, and that probably led to some kind of a phase resetting that's locked in the two brains together and synchronized just like with the mother. So this was really cool. Yeah. We thought that this mother smell would have an effect, but we didn't think that would have such a big effect that there would be no difference between synchrony with mother and stranger. And that was a bit surprising.
Yeah. So, okay. So this is really fascinating. And I'm also thinking something about the smell, because the infant knows, or the baby knows they're safer. It's maybe acting on the stress response in the baby, or, I mean, what are the proposed physiological changes that could be happening if you were to speculate?
So I think one correlate, we didn't take hormones because this is hard from infants and with, but we did measure their autonomic response. So you really do see some kind of a relaxation in the child, in the presence of the mother's body odor, but you also see more interest. They looked more at the stranger face. She became more an object to explore. Like, what's going on here? It seems safe to explore, but that's not mommy. So there was like this kind of puzzle. So they were looking much more at the stranger face when the mother smell was right in front of them. So I would say there are two types of mechanism, one of stress reduction, but then one perhaps of increasing alertness.
This is really interesting. Now, I'm also wondering, breastfeeding, not breastfeeding, was that a factor that played a role?
So in the same experiment, we had breastfeeding and non-breastfeeding moms, and that made no difference. Okay. However, we had another paradigm, is that we videoed mothers during a breastfeeding session or a bottle feeding session in the same position, so that the position when the two interacting partners had the cap. So we measured brain to brain synchrony during feeding and compared it to brain-to-brain synchrony during play. And just like the old style from the Huffer group, again, in the 70s and early 80s, there is this kind of perfect synchrony between mother-infant brain during breastfeeding. There's like, you see the waves and they just like it's unbelievable. It's almost like one brain. So then during breastfeeding, there is this perfect synchrony. I imagine that has to do with the oxytocin and the pulsatile release of oxytocin, and that everything is in such a relaxed physiological state. So that really tells us that breastfeeding is, it did happen also in the bottle feeding, but not to the same extent.
Okay.
So feeding is a context. It's like a jump start for your child. It's an experience that your baby can be not within the body, where the synchrony is obviously perfect, but outside and still one unit, perfect brain synchrony between the two brains. So
I mean, that's fascinating, but unfortunately not everyone can breastfeed.
But bottle feeding in the same position, when it's done sensitively, can reach very high level of synchrony that the child is not losing out. Maybe it's not as synchronized, but it's highly synchronized. And even for mothers who were bottle feeding in, you know, this was a typical sample of middle-class moms. So they were all sensitive, whether they are breastfeeding or not. But you could see moms who are very sensitively bottle feeding and paying attention to the child's pace. Also very, very close synchrony during the feeding situation. It was like a relaxed experience. Okay.
So then my next question is, what about fathers or partners?
Right. So I would tell you what we think, because our next project going on right now, like you say, COVID permitting, every couple of weeks, there is the Omicron or the Delta, and then the lab closes and now we can't see. So this study is going to take a long time. But we've had already, I would say, close to 20 deaths. The previous study was about around 60 moms. So I would say we're like third way into the study, that the same story. We have fathers with the smell, they wear the shirt, it's the same paradigm. And we have a dad from the neighborhood that has a baby the same age. And I'll tell you what we think, but it may be, but we haven't analyzed even part of the data. So this is totally an assumption. What we saw with the mother is that the connectivity of the two brain was right brain to right brain of mother and child and across all paradigms and on theta rhythms.
Okay.
And the right brain is really what matures first. In the first 3 years, the right brain predominates, and only then with the development of language and we become more linguistic people, so then the left brain predominates. But right brain is emotion and nonverbal communication and feeling and unconscious processes. And this is what the mother and infant coordinated with. And it was in the child's social brain, like to the heart of the child's social brain. So this right brain of the child and theta rhythm, which is also like a rhythm of the developing brain. So the child got that during synchrony with the mom. I would think that synchrony with the dad could be cross-hemispheric, could somehow involve the left brain. I think the child's brain would recognize the father's smell. This would be my assumption. But I imagine the connectivity that the child creates with the dad would be at different places, different mm-hmm. spots in the brain. There would be different patterns of connectivity.
And do you think that would be a factor of primary caregiver experience?
Right. So that's a question. So when it came to the parental brain, we measured that in gay dads who mm-hmm. are raised, who had a child by surrogacy, raising a child within a committed relationship, because again, single parenting brings a whole, it's a whole different story for the parental brain when you raise a baby alone. But no mother from birth. And we saw that there are certain elements that the father's brain adapts to the primary caregiving, you know, it mm-hmm. really, but the pathway towards activation, those ancient maternal system is somehow through caregiving, through the more higher order cortical structure. It's a different pathway. So I would think that both, you know, smell is very primary. The child is exposed to the mother's smell in utero. So I would say primary caregiving would probably give us maybe enhanced connectivity or somewhat different connectivity, but still there, I imagine, you know, that there are no, mm-hmm. no fine. There would be something special about mother's smell, you know, the kid is really exposed to it much more during nursing, during childbirth, during pregnancy. So
yeah,
there would probably be an effect. But just to mention briefly, I think this has some practical implication, like when children at this age, when they go to daycare, just like, you know, Winnicott already wrote about it when he spoke about the transitional object, taking something that has the mother's smell or the home smell or that represents the mother is really could make the shift easier for the child.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like such a simple intervention that could have a large impact, essentially. But I'm wondering, so what's next?
So what's next for us or what we're doing now? So the smell study, the next project was the dead yep. project, which is ongoing. But the brain-to-brain synchrony, what we're doing now, we're doing it with clinically depressed moms. And the story with depressed moms, and you probably know it, you've written a lot about it, is that it's like one of six. It's by far the most prevalent psychiatric disorder. People don't talk about it like ASD or other disorders because it's been with us for so long, and moms are so powerless, and they don't fight for their right or fight for budget. But this is it. This is the thing we should circle on. Postnatal, prenatal, or postnatal depression, it is so prevalent. Numbers going high every decade. And I am sure with the COVID.
Yes. We're already seeing some studies showing out of Canada that there's increased depression and anxiety in new moms in the postpartum. I mean, this is not a surprise given the conditions of the pandemic. Yeah.
Right. So what we realized for a long time, we're doing work with depressed moms, is that it's very hard for them to come to the lab, even when we give them, they just can't get themselves organized. So we have we developed a portable brain-to-brain system, and we just go to them. So the whole story is happening in their home, not in the lab. And we see mother-infant brain-to-brain synchrony, both when they interact, when the mother is unavailable, when she's face-to-face interacting, but also when they are viewing a video of a mother, right? Both when they're doing it and when they are looking at a video of a mother breastfeeding, a mother playing with a child, a mother still facing a child. And we developed, it's already running for 2 years. Again, with the COVID, it's not running in the pace that I'd like. We developed an 8-week intervention, synchrony-based intervention for depressed moms. It's a dyadic intervention. It has a video feedback component. So we film them, we take it to the lab, and we really look second by second, and we bring back the videos to the mother, and we show them where they did well. Even if the entire session they did well for 30 seconds, that's what we talk about. How you did well, how your child was looking for you, how your child was smiling at you, what a great mother you are. And, you know, it's every session is a different topic, and we talk to them about the importance of synchrony and touch, et cetera, et cetera. And we take brain-to-brain measures before the intervention. It's an RCT, obviously, and after the intervention. And that's ongoing. It's already going for 3 years in the lab. Very slowly, very slowly. But the goal is to recruit 100 moms with clinical depression, unipolar, axis one, major depression. And 50 healthy mothers, and then do the 2 observation before and after.
50 of the mothers would have the intervention randomized, that's RCT, randomized control trial, and then 50 of the mothers wouldn't have the intervention, but would spend the same amount of time with the individual or a different intervention?
Right. So actually, the RCT is between 2 interventions.
Okay.
These are 100 depressed moms. 50 would get our synchrony-based training, and 50 would get something like more like a psychoeducational support, interacting the same amount with their baby. And then another 50 just healthy moms that are being filmed before and after a 2-month period. So the randomization is between depressed moms of the same conditions, 50 that are getting our specific intervention to enhance synchrony, and 50 that are just getting a general support for motherhood.
Yeah. This is cool. Super interesting. I think that this idea also of focusing on that positive interaction, like babies looking at you, look at that. This is so great that this is happening. It's really positively reinforcing to a mom who's struggling.
Right. Because they feel so bad about themselves anyway. So,
yeah,
you know, depression is really about moms not feeling themselves capable of doing the job.
Yeah. And it's such an important area of research, maternal mental health. it's just been ignored forever. So I think increasing our, well, our science around it, and especially when it comes to the brain, is so important.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Oh, this is exciting. I'm excited. I have to have you back for that, of course.
Right. If I promise to come back, maybe things will happen faster, right?
Yeah.
It's really been dragging for so long. It's like really tough now to go to the mother's home because of the lockdowns. And
yeah, it's really interfering, this pandemic, and it changes. So, good. I mean, I think that sums it up. We've learned a lot, but maybe, I mean, do you have like a take home for parents out there? Something you'd want them to know in terms of brain health or parenting in general?
You know, just the general, like listen to the child's cues, and that naturally you have the ability to synchronize with the child brain. It's in us. It's not complicated. We don't need to learn it, just to give it time. And also that parenting is about error and reparation. It's okay to make mistakes. It can be repaired. That's the process of being a parent.
Yeah, super. Well, thank you so much. Questions, comments, suggestions, get in touch at Mommy Brain Revisited on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can also contact me on my website at jodipaluski.com. That's JODIPAWLUSKI.com. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Stripe.